Thank you for listening to Decisions That Matter, a Procurative podcast. On today's episode, we are lucky to have with us Dr. Stephen Gordon. And you'll notice that the first couple minutes of the episode have a little bit of background noise. You should hear that audio feedback disappear around the 2 minute and 45 second mark. Thanks for listening. Welcome to the Decisions That Matter podcast, where we meet with leaders from across the procurement community to discuss innovative and strategic ideas. Because when it comes to procurement, every decision matters. Welcome to the Decisions That Matter podcast. I'm your host, Alex Donos, and I'm here with co-host Steve Isaac. And we are also joined today by Dr. Stephen Gordon. If you're in the procurement space, there's a good chance you know who he is. But he has been the president of NIGP. He's been the CPO of multiple different governments. And I'm not even going to go down the whole list. I'm going to put it in the show notes for you. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Gordon.
You're welcome, Alex and Steve. It's good to be with you guys.
So to kick us off, you have a pretty wide breadth of experience in the procurement space. But one of the things we did want to talk to you about is your experience with strategic sourcing and kind of the evolution of that, how you've seen that change from when it really became popular to kind of how it's evolved into how people are using it now.
Yeah. Well, I guess, Alex, we should begin with how I define strategic sourcing. And my definition is designing, executing, and managing procurement in a way that it supports the strategic plan of the particular entity. That's how I define it. And it's very much at the top level goal focus, either the cities or the counties, the school district, or whatever entity's strategic plan, and then moving all the way down into how procurement executes at the tactical level. But that's a good way to transition to the sort of the history. When I first began in procurement in, I hate to say it, but 1975, I was an intern with Prince George's County, Maryland. And at that point, the concept of strategic sourcing, I wouldn't say had really taken on any observable form. At that point, procurement was still very much a transactional process where the procurement agency would receive requisitions from their client agencies and the procurement office would fulfill those requisitions. So, you know, at that point, it was through an invitation to bid, you know, or invitation for a bid, depending on where you live. And it's, as we all know now, and as I learned, you know, through my years, it's a lot easier to be strategic with an RFP process, competitive negotiation, competitive sealed proposals process, than it is with a competitive sealed bidding process. But I won't get too far off on that because I think our listeners will know full well what I'm talking about there. But I saw the evolution toward strategic service sourcing begin to be talked about, if my memory serves me correctly, sometime probably in the mid 90s, something like that. And it has it has picked up steam since then and how much it's talked about. Although, quite frankly, I'm not really sure if you asked me to say how much strategic sourcing is there, I would have to say there's not nearly as much as there should be. Okay, just if you'll allow me to be that general. And it's and I think, you know, thanks to tools like, you know, the one you guys offer and the tools that are offered by some other companies, I believe those tools are going to really accelerate the process and allow public procurement entities to engage in more strategic sourcing. You know, one of the things that public procurement people have always aspired to is, since 1975, I mean, going all the way back, I've heard public procurement people say, why don't we get a seat at the table, you know, being in the executive suite? And I think that's always, has always been an aspiration for as long as I've been in procurement. But the challenge there is that, and I won't go into all the reasons, but I don't really believe, and it grieves me to say this, but I don't really believe that procurement has yet demonstrated in general, overall, there are exceptions, obviously, that it merits a seat at the table. You know, I know that sounds sort of harsh coming from a guy who loves public procurement. I advocate strategic public procurement, and my whole life has been spent in it. But I still think we're going to have to make more of a strategic contribution than we're making right now.
So when you think about that sort of getting the seat at the table, does it ever feel like there's a little bit of like a chicken and the egg kind of situation, right? It's like, does a strategic sourcing process need insight and buy-in from the broader organization and from leadership in order to really kind of be its like maximum, reach its maximum strategic potential? I'm wondering if you see that at all.
That's a great question. And I'm going to give you a complex and hopefully understandable answer. Okay. It is a chicken and an egg proposition. It really is. But as I said earlier, I believe we have not yet earned that seat at the table. We have to demonstrate, when I say we, I mean the procurement profession. We need to demonstrate in no uncertain terms that we are adding strategic value. We are helping, beginning with the elected officials and the senior management. We're helping. Our role is to, as a support function, and I don't mean that as a delimiting adjective, but as a support function within the government, our role is to equip and enable the senior management, the elected officials, and the frontline workers in our entity to do their job well and in a way that is consistent with the mission as reflected and the goals and objectives as reflected in our entity's strategic plan. And I'm not really sure, there may be some data out there. If there is, I don't know. I've seen some interesting anecdotes, but I'm not sure I could put a precise number on how many procurement offices actually develop their own strategic plans for their, not just their procurement office, but for the procurement program, you know, from in terms of a systems, you know, approach. And if they do, those strategic plans for both the offices and the program align with the strategic plans of everyone else, all the other functions within the government. I'm not really sure. And in beyond that, how well those plans are executed, carried out. Now, we all know, I can tell you from all my days in public procurement, I forget the exact old saying, but a plan is perfect until the battle begins. You know what I'm saying? That, you know, then things have to change. You have to be agile and nimble and adjust. So I think we have a ways to go there, but one anecdote that I remember is from one person who was talking, if I may say so, on one of NIGP, on their insight board, saying that, well, I make it a point to be involved in the entity strategic plan. I show up at the sessions of the higher ups, whether they invite me or not. And I speak up whether they ask me or not. So, and I love that. And I think, as trite as that sounds, I think there needs to be a whole lot more of that, you know? And so a lot of it comes back to, I'm a social scientist by training. So I'm into a lot of behavior and stuff like that. A lot of it comes back to whether people in procurement, how they view their role, okay? Do they see their role as, number one, is contributing to all the stakeholders of the government. You know, in a city government, for example, you know, look at all who that includes. That includes, obviously, the citizens, obviously, the taxpayers. It includes, like in many places, the people who travel through town on business. Okay. You know, it includes the business people. and yada, yada, yada. So so that's the first thing you have to say, am I totally in on serving the stakeholders of this government? Again, not directly, but enabling the people who do provide the services to serve the stakeholders of the government. So that's one very key thing. And the other is it's the right people, if strategic sourcing is going to occur, have to have the strong will and the competency to actually move the strategic plan of the organization through procurement. So in government, it can be tough depending on the culture of the particular government entity that you're working with. But in general, a person who's in procurement has to have the will to lead from wherever they are. And again, that sounds so facile, right? It sounds so simple. But I think that's a couple of the main points right there that I would offer in response to your question, Steve.
Thank you. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that, especially what you're talking about someone having the will to do it from their position, I think it requires people and professionals to go out a little bit on a limb, at least at the moment. And I think that that's challenging for all of us, for anyone to do. But I think you're right that maybe that is sort of the step that needs to be taken.
Well, it does. And let me just add just a little bit of corny humor in there. When you go out on that limb, you just always need to make sure that you're the only person close to that limb. Because as I used to tell my students when I was teaching at Old Dominion University, you don't want to be out there on that limb and hear that sound, woompa, woompa, woompa. In other words, the limb is being sawed out beneath you. Okay. You don't want to hear that. So the serious part of that corny joke is that, you don't want to go out on a limb unless it's not going to be sawed out from under you, okay? You want to be sure that you're on solid ground, that you have some support. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't take some calculated risks sometimes, because true leaders take reasonable risks.
I know earlier in our conversation, you mentioned some of the tools and technologies that are coming out. One of the areas of where people can think more strategically is using some of these new tools and technologies kind of enable that more strategic thought. And I know one of the things that we've often talked about is, tools and technology can give procurement people back some of the bandwidth that they really need to actually take the time to kind of look at problems holistically and undergo a strategic sourcing process. I know you had an early role in some technology development for the procurement space with the APS system. Could you tell us a little bit about that and maybe how you feel like that has kind of fed some of the new tools and technology we're seeing today?
Well, it's sort of like the book of Genesis in the beginning. The year would have been about 1978, 1979, somewhere in there, when NIGP, both its board and its staff, realized that there was really no electronic procurement system out there for local governments and state agencies to use. I won't go into all the gory details, but there just wasn't one out there. So one of the greatest men I ever knew, and I mean that, was a guy named Homer Forster. And no one listening to this call will remember Homer. But that one man probably contributed more to NIGP and what it's done over the years and what he did continues to contribute to the profession. And Homer was the executive director of the Texas Board of Control. In other words, he was the chief procurement officer for the state of Texas. And Homer called up Lou Spanger, who was at that time the chief executive officer of NIGP. And they had a little conversation. We really need to address this need. It's long since passed the time when people need to be, handling all the procurement processes with paperwork, literally paperwork, not this electronic paperwork that we complain about, but literally paperwork, where a requisition would get put into a basket, an out basket, and it would get put in one of those, you know, inner office memoranda things. Steve, again, you probably never seen one of these, but they'd stick it in there and wrap the string around the little red thing on the back of it and send it to procurement. And of course, among other things, that subjected procurement to a lot of demonization. That we've always been demonized for, you know, being too slow. You know, we could, you know, in procurement, we've always believed that you could anticipate somebody's needs before they think of it and have it on their desk waiting for them, and they'd still think you were too slow. Okay, so you know, that was just one drawback. You know, you can just think of keeping track of all the paper, tracking for, you know, visibility into the process where things were, and so forth. So Lou and Homer talked about it some. Then Lou called me in there into his office, and he said, "Well, Steve, I think we need to go down to Austin, Texas, and have a conversation with Homer Forster." And as it turned out, Homer had been sort of cooking this plan in his head for a few months. And he had a couple of guys who worked for him, and I'm going to give them a shout out, Forrest Simonton and James Kewen, two of the nicest guys, people you'll ever meet. And so we went down, talked with Homer, and I remember sitting in a car with Homer after we'd had a great meal at some fantastic barbecue place down in Austin. And Homer was a very deliberate man. Now, this was a guy, by the way, who had flown airplanes over Europe in World War II. So this guy was definitely a leader, and he definitely had will and guts. Okay. So, you know, he was not afraid, you know, of hypothetical risk. And so Homer and I sat there in his Bronco, and he, you know, just like a good, you know, like you see on the TV, police shows on TV, you know, how they'll ask the person they're interviewing the same question three or four different times, three or four different ways. And that's what Homer did with me. And he kept saying, you know, basic question was, are you sure we need this? Are you sure if we do it, it will sell? Because Homer had already lined up these two guys that I mentioned a minute ago to develop this software system that was to become the NIGP purchasing system. That was the original name. Once the product, I guess the work product, was piloted and worked very well, NIGP did I believe we did the right thing by, we literally spun the thing off. We said, you know, we have, you know, as an association, we have met the need. We've proved the need. And so we then spun it off back to Forrest Simonton and James Kewen, who set up the company, which I'm proud to say that I named, which was, so that's one of my contributions was the name, Automated Procurement Systems, APS. And it turned out to be a heck of a system, and it's in its umpteenth iteration now, but it's still out there. But it was the first, and it has done so much. It met such basic needs as, you know, people who are listening will laugh, but it, like enabling people to submit requisitions electronically. Wow, right? So being able to release purchase orders from a contract database that you had. Wow. The ability to electronically administer your contracts. Wow. I keep saying wow, okay? And but it met that basic need. And it's like anything else, anything new, just like you guys are experiencing with your, you know, with your company, is you always have to, you always have to go out there and find your truest of the true leaders to be the guys who are your early adopters, your pilot testers and early adopters. And they were there, and they did a great job of shaking it down. It's been a long time ago. I can't tell you who all those guys and gals were, but the one who I will remember who was there day one, who said, who was waiting in line, said, "I want to try it out and give it a proof of concept for you." That was Louis Moore, who for many, many, many decades was the director of procurement for the city of St. Petersburg, Florida. And there have been so many others involved through the years as that product has, you know, iterated, evolved, who have made it a much better product. But I'm proud to say that NIGP at Homer Forster's urging and with the strong involvement of Lou Spangler, we actually put something out there as an association, as a service to our membership. You know, we never intended to be a long-term revenue generator for us. And unfortunately, Forrest and James did a great job of continuing the story. I did get my role as a member of the NIGP staff, in addition to being interrogated by Homer that night in the Bronco, was the product manager. And it was my job to market the product, you know, to find the early adopters and to market the product. You know, we did it very old school in those days. We printed these things called brochures, you know, and we still use a few of those, right? So, but we mass marketed it to our membership. And it was just an humbling experience to have been a part of it. It really was.
Awesome. Thank you. You know, it's interesting because I think today we are now seeing, and across the procurement profession, we're seeing that there is a real mix of people, some of whom are really interested in being early adopters of new technologies and techniques, and some who are still using the paper process for their requisitions, like we're talking about. So it's interesting that, you know, there's always, you know, those different striations and interests in this kind of innovation. But speaking to it and speaking to, you know, your role in the work you did at NIGP of building something for the community, you know, I want to move to kind of talking about how you see the role of collaboration, you know, in procurement, working with your colleagues, working with your neighbors, getting their insights and building off of those. How do you see that as having developed recently and how's that going across the space?
Gosh, that's a great question. I could spend the next 3 hours answering it, but I'll try to be succinct here. We're beginning to see, actually, there was a spell during the late 1960s and early 1970s where there was a great deal of collaboration in procurement. And again, this was before you even had, you know, the automation that we have now, okay, way before that. And it generally revolved around organizations called councils of governments, or which are essentially regional planning agencies on steroids. Then you have various levels beneath that, which they'll call themselves regional planning agencies or whatever. But for some reason, that just didn't continue to grow. It stayed where it was, but it was fairly localized. And another area where it occurred was in some NIGP chapters, which actually set up what the COGS had done, which was cooperative procurement programs. And when I say cooperative procurement, I mean true cooperative procurement. I don't mean piggybacking somebody else's contract. To me, that's not cooperative procurement. That's piggybacking, okay? There's a difference. And in that stage, and to an increasing degree now, we are beginning to see some acceleration there. Is in true cooperative procurement, it involves full collaboration among all the participating entities, you know, where you not only have, you know, economies of scale to drive better pricing and terms, but you also had in that kind of true cooperative procurement and in the ones that are now beginning to build up again, thankfully, you had true collaboration in which not only were people combining their requirements on the front end in solicitation, which is, you know, definitely a hallmark of true cooperative procurement as opposed to piggybacking. You also have people sitting around a table, again, very analog, right? And discussing their ideas and experiences with buying the particular commodity that was going to be bought through a true cooperative contract, you know, again, lessons learned, you name it. So it was very rich, a very rich type thing. but it was not as rich as the collaboration really needs to be, Steve. I think we now need to move beyond just collaboration within cooperative procurement programs. We need to move to both internal collaboration of the same type within public entities and among public entities and among public entities and suppliers. Okay. So, sort of a Boolean thing, if you can imagine that. And because just to take, for example, the issues, all the bad things that happened at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. Long story short, what happened? People couldn't get the PPE they needed, okay? And so, so most buyers, not all, but most buying agencies found themselves in a position where they were having to chase PPE all over the world, sometimes from valid vendors, sometimes from shysters, and, sometimes making advance payments, okay, when there was, and still not receiving the product. I mean, but that's obviously something we don't want to repeat, right? And next time around, it may not be PPE, it could be something else. Think of all the disruptions to the supply chain we've had this year, just this year. Most recently, I guess you could say the war over there in Ukraine, okay, which is definitely affecting the supply chain. But okay, but if we're going to solve a societal program like that, when I say societal, I mean global society in that case, but let's just focus it to the United States and Canada. If we're going to face it, there has to be, and I won't bore you with all the research I've done on this, but there's going to have to be this kind of collaboration within, internal collaboration within entities. And that means the end users and the, talking to procurement in conversation with finance and with the using agency and so forth and so on. There needs to be that kind of rich collaboration. But at the same time, those same people need to be in collaboration with the supplier community and not just with their salesman on the front end, but every other person who is supporting the supply. And there is just, the challenges there are innumerable. It's going to take a very deliberate process, but it can be done. And just as an example, I can talk to you about how an important part of it is, which goes along with the collaboration, is using what I call market-based, incentive-driven procurement based on outcome-based procurement. And the people who are listening to this will know what that is. But in addition to that, to get to that, before you can have a strong solicitation to use in a market-based, incentive-driven, outcome-based procurement, a lot of words there, you have to have a solicitation that not only is covers everything it should cover in terms of expected outcomes and how among other things, how the suppliers are to respond, but it also has to be realistic and feasible. You just can't pull something out of your ear, and just throw it at the supplier committee. And that's where the collaboration with suppliers comes around. NIGP actually did this type of approach, used this type of approach 40 years ago. NIGP had and that's where the idea came to me 40 years ago when collaboration with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the National League of Cities, because I was the program director for NIGP, I would use the word we actually use that market-based incentive-driven approach to incentivize or induce, to use in other words, suppliers to provide products that were quieter. That was just one dimension. That was the value dimension in that case. And what happened was through 73 different procurements, long story short, NIGP and EPA and NLC demonstrated that it was not only possible, it was very possible to to buy that added value in addition to the, you know, the product attributes, not only at reasonable prices, but in all the 73 procurements that were done under the auspices of that program, quieter products were bought at, in most cases, at lower, at the person offering the lowest, the quietest product was also the lowest bidder. Okay. So again, that's where you, so a lot of detail. So how did we get to that? We got to that by working directly with the supplier community to figure out what would work and what would not work. And we found that, among other things, incentives, you know, work really well within a competitive bidding process. So, but again, you have to have those things for people to do that kind of thing, Steve and Alex. You have to have what? You got to have that will, you got to have that leadership. You got to have that competency. Okay. That's all got to be there. Okay. That was a long way to answer your question, but what I was trying to describe is the really rich and deep collaboration that is not just theoretical, but that has been proved involving both the, you know, internally and externally within the buying community and with an overlap with the supplier community. So you've got to have those things.
You brought up the pandemic example, and I think that was a clear, seeing some of what happened in those early months, I know it was out of desperation, but it was also a clear indication of like why a lot of these procurement rules and kind of structures exist the way that they do. It's when you hear about a guy meeting somebody behind the airport and giving them a check for $4 million, and then he doesn't end up bringing the mask. There's some crazy stuff that happened during that
period.
Yeah. But then we, at the same time, were still doing some of these podcast episodes. So we were talking to these different school districts, governments, and for like a couple months while that was all going on. And I still remember there was a huge variety in how prepared people were for this situation, and then how much they were able to help the neighboring communities. Like whether some of them were asking for help, being like, "Hey, we're dying here. We need help. Can you give us some masks? Can you give us some supplies?" And then another half were basically like, "Yeah, we're good. We are here. Like, we're able to help the people around us." And I really think you hit the nail on the head with that collaboration with the suppliers. It's one of the bigger school districts in Missouri, and we talked to their procurement team, and they were basically like, "Yeah, like, we're all set. We've set up a structure so that surrounding schools and districts across southwestern Missouri can ask, they can put in requests to us, and if we have stuff, we'll give it to them." But their examples were all like, "Oh yeah, we had a supplier who usually just helped us with hardware, but it turns out that they also do medical supplies and they do water and emergency equipment. So we were able to get 50,000 water bottles from the place where we usually buy hammers or whatever." That doesn't exist if you don't have a good relationship with your supplier. So to hear them talk about it was actually really cool. And they like weren't panicking and weren't having to stress out about it because they had 30 good relationships that they were able to dig into and figure stuff out.
Yeah, right. You know, and Alex, as good as that is a great testament to the power of relationships. Where I think we need to go, and which is something I'm working on through this all-volunteer group called the Continuity of Supply Initiative, we are encouraging governments. We're just basically, let me add a little humor here, say, we'll say to them, "I know you had a lot of fun scrambling to find all that stuff, but how would you like to be able to have something, a disruption occur and not have to interrupt your routine?" You know, so we're encouraging them through this same type of rich and deep collaborative approach to build, to go out for those items that you know you can't do without, and create an award structure which will result in whoever you award your solicitation to assuring you that no matter what happens, your supply of whatever it will continue to come to you. Now, can you 100% guarantee that? No. But there are things that really competent procurement people can do. And they don't all have to do it on their own. It can be like, you know, it can be like a true cooperative procurement in which a lead agency that has, you know, all the competencies and has all the technology and so forth that it needs can actually lead this kind of true cooperative procurement, in which you now obviously a winner of this kind of RFP would have to do what? You don't just take the, you don't just allow them to say, yeah, we'll make sure you don't run out. You know, just like you guys in the due diligence business, the procurement people will have to, in this kind of thing, that when we encourage them to say, now you're going to have to set up an evaluation. I hate to use the word scheme, but that's what the Brits call it, an evaluation scheme, where you can actually see whether this proposer who's telling you they can assure continuity of supply no matter what, you require them to demonstrate, to prove that they can do this. And among other things that you will look at is vetting to the extent possible their supply chain as far down as you can go. Because that's one of the things, the opacity of supply chains has been a real problem in, particularly in today's world, in vetting suppliers, because, you know, and you guys know better than I do all the complexities in trying just to compare one brand to another brand, okay? Because they got offices everywhere, they got teams everywhere, you know. But what I'm trying to say in a simple way is, we've got to be more proactive in, particularly now, given what we've learned in the pandemic, to build in our contracts in such a way that when the bump occurs, you just keep on rolling. You don't have to go into the Wild West, okay, and take really crazy risks. You don't have to do that. It's the old thing about prior planning prevents poor performance, you know. So it's and it takes more front-end work and development. It takes the collaboration without going through that again. But if I hope we never go through again what we went through with the PPE at the pandemic. And that's what we're advocating that people do through this continuity of supply initiative.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think circling all the way back to our seat at the table, like we were talking about, get a seat at the table by being really proactive and going out on a limb with new techniques and you know, ways of doing business. But preparedness and resiliency and proving that in the face of challenges is also another way that, like, you earn that trust and you earn that seat at the table by showing that in an emergency, you know, procurement's got this. You know, I think, you know, one question I have, and I think it kind of brings us all the way back to that sort of seat at the table question and what procurement people can be doing is, I guess I would ask, what advice do you have for the sort of next generation of procurement professionals? We have a rising group of procurement professionals who are going to be more technologically savvy, who are more interconnected with one another. So it feels to me like there's a great opportunity for that kind of collaboration. What advice would you have for those folks as they're kind of rounding into their procurement careers?
Well, again, I could give you another 2-hour answer on there, but let me try to chop it down a little bit. The first thing I would say is, lead from wherever you are in the context of being a true public servant, you know, not somebody who's there just to make it through the day, but being a true public servant who's committed to making sure the stakeholders in your government, you know, are served the way they should be. That's the first thing I would say. And secondly is use those technology tools that are available to you. And I'm going to mention technology resources in a minute, but technology tools that are available to you in a way that aligns with what you're trying to get done in your strategic plan, which again, must go all the way up to the top to the entity strategic plan. So intentionally do that. And finally, take advantage of the tremendous, I don't even know what label to put on it, but the tremendous resources that are out there, like your company. There's companies like Co-Procure is another one that comes to mind. You know, really solid service organization. Take advantage of these things. And all of these, by the way, are forms of collaboration. And I guess it goes without saying is make collaboration in whatever circumstance and in whatever form it needs to be a part of you. It's just as much as your breathing is, okay? Because collaboration, the kind of collaboration, that rich, deep collaboration, that's something that just needs to be baseline with you.
Thanks for listening to Decisions That Matter. This podcast is brought to you by Procurated, the leading supplier evaluation tool for procurement professionals across the U.S. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you prefer to listen. See you again next time.